Namaskar and welcome to Radio Eka. My name is Shruti Deora.
And my name is Priyanka.
And we are your hosts for the Radio Eka podcast.
Eka is a place to learn Yoga Nidra, Pranayama, and meditations from India. We have a mobile app and we also offer daily meditation classes on Zoom. If you want to try the app or join our classes, please check out our website www.ekameditation.com or just check the show notes.
Hi Priyanka. Today, let's talk about the impact of yoga on the brain, the nervous system and the mind. So in the last episode, we learned about the importance of building muscular strength and how yoga provides a really good foundation by enhancing joint mobility, flexibility and holding strength. We have seen there are other ways to achieve muscle strengthening goals. But what makes yoga really unique is that along with the physical benefits, in the same workout, we also get neuromotor coordination, balance, body awareness, and relaxation. So remember the third recommendation by the Center for Disease Control, United States, for physical exercise. So yoga is providing all of those benefits as well. So I really want to understand how all this works. And these are incredibly complex topics. So should we start with the basics?
Yes. And I think what we are talking about today is really relevant. With all the information overload and the noise about food, diet, exercise that we have around us, sharpening our attention and awareness and learning how to rest and relax are so important. And while there is scientific research, it is just catching up on the health impacts of yoga. We do hear empirical evidence accumulated over centuries or even millennia on how yoga helps us to be more aware and more relaxed. And that's all of our personal experience too, right? So I would really like to understand that how the physical body, the brain, and the nervous system are all connected, and how we feel and how we respond is influenced by the health of these.
Yeah, definitely. And before we really dive into the effects of yoga on the brain and the nervous system, I'd like to remind our listeners that whenever we exercise, the nervous system is actually deeply involved. And what we will be discussing now is the coordination of muscular action and the nervous system. In one word, that's what's called neuromotor control. Basically, it takes a sequence of events for any action to happen. For example, when you lift a weight, the decision to lift the weight was taken by the brain, but then the nervous system takes the signals from the brain to the muscle, recruits the muscle to contract and perform that action. And similarly, events are responsible for balance and agility.
Yeah, and I find it so interesting that how our nervous system responds to signals from the external environment coming to our brain in turn contributes to how relaxed or agitated we feel. So it is kind of like a two-way communication. And to learn more about all of this, we are thrilled to have with us today, Professor Gangadhar. Professor Gangadhar is a senior professor of psychiatry and the former director of the prestigious National Institute of Mental Health and Neurosciences, also known as NIMHANS in India. He has been a pioneer in both clinical and research work related to the application of yoga in psychiatric disorders. He has made significant contributions in understanding the neurobiology of schizophrenia and has been awarded several prestigious awards and honors, including the Padma Shri in 2020. Professor Gangadhar, it is a real privilege to connect with you. Welcome. We are very grateful to have you here with us today on the EKA podcast.
Namaste. So
Dr. Gangadhar, to begin with, we would like to understand how yoga helps with neuromotor fitness. Aspects of balance, coordination, agility, etc. And how just simple stretching and holding the posture in asana practice can help us build all of this.
So it is not just a stretch or an unusual posture that is the issue, but I think you are doing it mindfully. All through you are mindful of the posture, mindful of each of the movement that have been happening and the experience that you're undergoing, and mindfully relaxing in that position. So this is incomplete, that posture, asana, whatever you do. There could be many asanas that are done. Now, how does it help the neuromotor control is one question you ask me. I cannot say that there are any good research data on this, but nonetheless, there have been several hypotheses that have been built which are testable over the course of time. You know, our body to be able to keep me fairly steady and balanced receives several inputs from my muscles, my joints, and my tendons, various postural, what we call as apparent sensations that go up to my brain. So my brain knows which side the weight is getting more, which side is getting less, which muscle had to be pulled back so that the fellow gets into a straight vertical position or doesn't lose its balance, doesn't fall down. So these are all things which are controlled by my inputs that are going into the brain from my body. Usually we take it for granted. We really don't apply our mind on this. It happens very, what we may call as unconsciously, without any my need to pay attention to that. So I retain my balance, I am steady, everything is going on. But over time, as we keep older and we get older and older, this ability to balance becomes less and less because we have really not trained our body to be able to perceive these signals and to be able to amplify them in my brain. So as you know, as we get older, the third stick comes into our hand. We've been walking on two legs and we get in. So we know that we need the third part, the hand also to send the message that I am losing balance, I need some support. So yoga, while doing the yoga asana, being mindful, training yourself to be able to perceive the sensation, trying to be able to know what your body is actually doing, paying attention and holding on to that and consciously also relax those bodies, part of the body which are contracting more or less. So this conscious effort to pay attention to my own bodily sensation from within to my mind is what probably trains my mind, trains my muscles to be now conscious, and probably it fine-tunes this radio station to receive the signal better. So continuous practice of yoga improves this neuromotor coordination, and it has been tested and used in clinical practice for various conditions where this neuromotor balance has to be actually improved. And they have found that yoga actually gets this better.
So that connects a lot of dots for me, actually, that how attuning ourselves to breath and bodily sensations gives us conscious control over our muscles, which in turn helps our balance and coordination today and when we get older. So Priyanka, tree pose or the Vrikshasana is actually one of my daughter's favorite yoga poses. And asanas like the Natarajasana and the Virbhadrasana 3 or the Warrior 3, they definitely challenge our neuromuscular system to maintain our body in equilibrium. And all of this while aligning our movement with inhalation and exhalation and holding the posture and relaxing into it. So Professor Gangadhar, yoga classes are often associated with relaxation. So what are the ways in which yoga induces relaxation in the body and the mind? And especially, I'm wondering if you can talk about how it impacts the nervous system, the endocrine system, etc.
Yeah, there are. It's true that a person doing yoga asana gets relief from anxiety, depression, and many other mental disturbances. It's been fairly well demonstrated by good research that the stress comes down with the practice of yoga. And in fact, the very yoga itself in its definition has manah prashamanopayaha iti yoga. What makes your mind peaceful is yoga. And in fact, the Patanjali, when he defines yoga, also says yoga chitta vritti nirodaha means mental oscillations are curtailed, and that is yoga. So yoga and mind are irrevocably linked. So your mind calmer means yoga, or you do yoga, you can get mind calmer. This is number one. So when this happens, Your anxiety becomes better, your depression gets better, your emotional state gets better, your schizophrenia-like symptoms get better, and your perturbance and agitation gets better. Your unusual attraction to alcohol and other behavioral addictions get better. So there are several such things that have been demonstrated. People have researched and have been using yoga for these conditions. Leave that issue apart. How does yoga bring about this factor? I'll start from Om. After all, in any Indian traditions, we start with Om. When you chant Om, which is a part of most yoga practices, either in the beginning or in the end or in the middle, somewhere Om chanting is a part of most yoga packages. Most yoga gurus talk about Om chanting. And we are able to demonstrate some good research. What happens when I chant Om? When I chant Om, some of my gray matter in the brain, called as limbic gray matter, which are all emotional centers in my brain, they become deactivated. When it is activated, I become either highly emotional, angry, depressed, anxious. These things can be charged because of the activation of this limbic gray matter. And chant Om, this limbic gray matter actually becomes deactivated. And this deactivation probably is related to its effect on my mind. I chant Om, I become calmer. And this is a known experience of chanting Om. So along with this Om, maybe some other practices have happened, but what we have actually examined the Om effect, the other effect. Now you practice yoga, a yoga session actually increases in my brain a neurotransmitter called as GABA, gamma amino butyric acid. This gamma amino butyric acid is widely distributed in the brain, but its increase actually calms my mind. It is something like your benzodiazepine medicine, a compost, etc. Medicine what I swallow would be acting through the GABA effects. But I do practice yoga and practice relaxation. My brain levels of GABA actually increase. This has been demonstrated by some other study. This Om chanting study was done by our laboratory. This GABA increases are demonstrated by some other study. So both in effect actually produce my relaxation in my mind. I get calmer. And this is a universal experience of all yoga. Now, when the brain centers become cooler, they become quieter, they don't excite my brain and my mind as much. The consequence effect would be a cascade of effects which should show up on your body. One of them is cortisol, a stress hormone. When I am stressed, the brain activates and the hypothalamus, the pituitary, and then I release cortisol from the adrenal cortex. Cortisol elevation is a measure of how excited I was. Cortisol levels higher in many psychiatric conditions, depression, anxiety, etc. It's been known, most people have talked about, and I'm highly depressed, my cortisol levels are high. Practice yoga, whether in healthy subjects or in depressed subjects, the cortisol levels drop. It has been fairly consistently demonstrated by many researchers in healthy subjects and in depressed individuals in our laboratory at NIMHANS earlier. So, as I said, the brain centers deactivated, the GABA neurotransmitter levels increase. The cascading effect on the cortisol become actually demonstrable that cortisol levels drop.
This is really insightful. What I'm hearing is that it is proven that regular yoga practice reduces the stress hormone cortisol. And I think this is a great reason to practice yoga, because managing stress is so important for modern urban living.
Indeed, I totally agree.
Now, there is a next cycle of events that get benefited by this cycle. Cortisol, in turn, actually can harm the brain. It will interfere with the repair mechanisms of the brain. to repair my brain, I need some chemical which is regularly produced and, you know, keeps repairing my brain time to time. That is called as brain-derived neurotrophic factor, BDNF in abbreviation. If BDNF levels are necessary for actual dynamic repair of the brain, and cortisol lowers this. It has been demonstrated in some other experiment. What we did was, we saw in people with the depression whether the brain-derived neurotrophic factor was actually lower than other individuals. In fact, it was lower compared to healthy subjects. To make them practice yoga, this brain-derived neurotrophic factor actually comes up. It doesn't happen with medicine alone. Medicine actually improves depression, but it does not repair this biological change that has happened in your body. So BDNF goes up. And in those people where the cortisol levels actually came down after yoga, it is in these people the brain-derived neurotrophic factor went up quite remarkably. So this inverse relationship with cortisol reducing the brain repair mechanism by reducing the brain-derived neurotrophic factor is substantiated by this reversal of that effect following yoga. So brain-derived neurotrophic factor repairs my brain. And that repair should be manifested in any change in the brain structure. Can we demonstrate this? My brain, if I continuously practice yoga, I am continuously producing sufficient brain-derived neurotrophic factor to repair my brain. So my brain should be better than the other fellows who did not practice yoga. There are 2-3 studies internationally, people have shown that chronic practice of yoga, in these people, the gray matter is more than those who did not practice yoga. One. Second, with age, my gray matter keeps coming down because I'm facing wear and tear of the stresses on my brain. And normally for you and me, with age, the gray matter starts coming down. But those who have been practicing yoga regularly, in them, that age-dependent drop in the gray matter was not seen. This is the second observation. And third observation is what we have done at NIMHAN earlier. 6 months of practice of yoga in elderly individuals. Elderly individuals lose a part of the brain called as hippocampus, which is related to memory. All of us are losing. Elderly will lose faster. You make them practice yoga for 6 months. At the end of 6 months, you repeat the scan before and at the end of 6 months, that gray matter in the hippocampus actually had grown. Or in other words, it probably did not shrink as you would expect. Whether this grow is really good enough or not, but it did not shrink, is a very important message that I want. So the brain effects are all mediated through the reduction of stress effects and a cascade of events which it actually helps to promote to repair my brain and make them. And then I go on to be a brainy person, retaining my brain health better than others. And lastly, on my body also, my body gets slowed down in my age. As I grow older, as I become biologically older and older, a part of my chromosome called as a telomere shortens with my age. The age determines the telomere length indicates what actually is my biological age. And people have shown that chronic practices of yoga in such individuals, age-dependent reduction in the length of the telomere is not as much. And in other words, people have shown, if you teach people yoga for a period of 1 year, there could be a slow attenuation of this reduction. So even on the brain and on the body also, your youth perhaps is preserved by virtue of practice of yoga. And behaviorally also, calmness, quietude, the reduction of emotional imbalance, reduction of attraction to drugs, alcohol, behavioral addiction, and also improving my motoric control, reduction in falls that happen when I get older. These are all benefits of neuropsychiatric related to practice of yoga.
Shruti, I just love to learn about the science behind the experiences. I can relate to this so well as my own personal experience in terms of how I feel different ever since I started my regular yoga practice. But I think this goes beyond on how yoga can help people dealing with anxiety, depression, addiction, and even schizophrenia, which are such big issues of our times. This is just fascinating.
Undoubtedly, this is fascinating and actually mind-blowing at some level. You know, especially like the part around slowing down or even reversing impacts of aging. Priyanka, as we enter the second half of our lives, I am very glad that we are armed with this knowledge and, you know, to reap the benefits of a regular yoga practice. Though I would like to add that regular and long-term practice are important for seeing sustained changes. So what Professor Gangadhar refers to in his point about, you know, change of habits and preferences.
And I wonder, while yoga asana has become so popular in gyms, meditation and pranayama are also very critical components of the yoga practice. So I wonder if 1 + 1 is greater than 2 when we talk about yoga. So Dr. Gangadhar, when you say yoga practice, was it meditation, pranayama, or specially designed asana sequences that you used for your research? And also, is it true that every posture in yoga has a different impact on the body? And is it true that the inclusion and exclusion of postures and the sequencing makes a lot of difference?
Yeah, you have a good point. Not much research has been invested into whether a given yoga X versus Y versus Z are differential in their effect. We don't have that data. But what is important to know is that practice of yoga is a combined components of the movements, the breathing regulation, either along with the movements or independently as pranayama, and then the meditation component, either independently doing meditation or being meditative and mindful while practicing the yoga. So all three components, my breathing, my motoric changes and relaxation, and being mindful all three contribute. Which contributes more or which contributes less? It is difficult to, coffee means a coffee decoction, a sugar and a milk. Would you say that different tests, when you separate, they are different? Would they give the same kick? We really don't know. But those who have gotten used to coffee, that's it. So a combination of these three, and I really don't know which one contributes more or less. I do not want to separate and test.
I think all the main takeaway for me is that there are certain aspects of the yoga practice that are important. And what we know is the breathing, the mindfulness through the practice and the postures that you talked about, but we don't have much clarity on what postures. But we know
there are of course traditional texts talk about XYZ posture gets this condition better, some other posture. This has been traditionally recorded, and we in NIMHANS also have done in the past a cocktail of different yoga postures for a given condition, and I've shown that most yoga therapists, yoga practitioners, yoga teachers recommend XYZ cocktail for people who are depressed, some other APQR for those people who are either anxious. This sort of grouping has been known in yoga therapy literature. Yes. But we, at this point of time, don't have a lot of research data to show that a posture X is related to condition Y. We probably have to accumulate more data.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Gangadhar. I think we have enough for this episode.
Great. That was pretty insightful. And with that, we come to the end of this series on asana and exercise.
Yes, and we learned so much my biggest learning has been how complete the practice is in itself for an average adult for a healthy body and mind. If one supplements it with the cardio exercise component, of course. And now I feel even more motivated to go deeper in my own yoga sadhana.
Spot on. And also, it's, I think, pretty clear that science has just begun to scratch the surface. And there's, I think, so much more to yoga than what we have evidence for today. For example, we're just beginning to unravel how a regular yoga practice can help people dealing with anxiety and depression at truly at a physiological level. So in future episodes, we hope to understand a lot more. Please don't forget to subscribe. Namaste.